I'm Katie Kempner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of inspiring conversations with remarkable working women. And I know everyone will agree that I am really speaking with a remarkable woman today, Amy Lanzi, the CEO of Digitas North America. Amy, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me. So happy to be here.
Thank you for making the time. We know you're very, very busy. So we'll cut straight to the chase. Could we start just by talking a little bit, maybe about your career path up until your role now?
Absolutely. So my first job was actually, I'm really a quant versus a qual. My first job was at American Airlines as a yield management analyst. This is really my financial background, where the role was essentially analyzing different routes, airline routes, so New York, Dallas, that was in Dallas at the time, and how you make the most money off of that plane. That was the job. And it was fascinating because it was an exposure to like how the business of the business, like how do you make money every time, as well as the importance of, you know, marketing certain routes and why someone might buy a trip from LaGuardia to New York, for example. So I started in a very, you know, finance analyst oriented role. And then I was recruited into the agency world by a founder, a gentleman that was founding the agency TPN, where I grew up. He felt that he couldn't really find agency talent. At the time he was the CMO of a major C-store organization. He felt that he couldn't find talent that understood the final mile of the moment when a consumer makes a purchase decision. And in that time, it was around what happens when you go into a brick and mortar store. And so he was building an agency on that moment in time, really, but also in the consumer's mind, and really trained all of us on the importance of a brand understanding how important it is to build the right experience inside of an unowned ecosystem. So in this case, it would have been a retailer. And he built an incredible agency. I was employee number 35. It was eventually acquired by Omnicom. And then I moved from being in a, you know, boutique agency that had a very, you know, specialty offering into a scaled agency inside of Omnicom. At Omnicom, I was there for over 20 years. I built out the offering as well as the retail vertical, and really enjoyed my time there, and then decided I wanted to get closer to media because that world had really transformed into how you're actually helping someone make a decision based on what they see, based on their search results, whether it's on Amazon or Walmart or whatever. So then I moved over to Publicis Media, best place to go, to build out a commerce practice. And then I moved into running Digitas. That's my story.
That is an amazing story. Now, I don't know, when you were talking, you mentioned American Airlines having taken the flight in the past week and a half twice from Miami to LaGuardia and back. I'm hoping you were not one of the people that said you could save my money by making the seats even smaller.
No, I wasn't. I that's an interesting trend that's happening. But, you know, I will say when one of the first things that American had us do, which I think is important about me as a how I think about clients and also about how I think about people that I lead. One of the first things they had us do was go be a gate agent. So I was in HQ, right? I was an analyst. But then they said, you need to have empathy for the gate agent because the gate agent is the one that has to work with and deal with you as an analyst overbooking the flight. So pretend you'd showed up and your flight was given away. I thought you were going to say, are you the someone that said, you know, you'll give up your seat for $500 about, right? So I were actually moved to Miami and I worked the Miami, New York, JFK route for a month as a gate agent. Wow. And it really made you understand customer service. It also made you think about, wow, the decisions that are made elsewhere. So in this case, it's like American HQ have incredible impact on everyone and never forget it. So it was a wild time. And that is, I have great respect for anyone that works in the field as a gate agent, because that's a really hard job to be able to figure out how you manage the customer that wants to get home for a birthday or a meeting or whatever. And someone, a kid in my regard, has overbooked this flight and kind of doesn't know what they're doing.
That is a great point in terms of employees overall, as a leader, understanding all the different roles that make up your organization. And that's something that I'm told you're amazing at. And in your LinkedIn bio, it says that you lead a team of 1,400 passionate unicorns. What does that mean?
So at Digitas, we call ourselves unicorns, as that's how we speak of ourselves as talent. And really what it means is incredible talent that is cross-trained, that understands modern marketing, data at the core, can speak to media investment, creative experience investment, and relationships, so the role of CRM. And this is talent that is able to do that fluidly versus being an expert in one thing. And then we call ourselves unicorns because this is really unicorn talent. And it also speaks to, you know, all the types of employees we want at Digitas. Everyone is welcome, which also speaks to that and our focus in terms of a diverse community inside of the agency.
So how do you spend your, as CEO, how do you spend your time?
Yes. That's a great question. And I have a decision-making framework around this. It's something I've really been working on. My previous job was more oriented on building the capability and really being in every group-oriented pitch, so Publicis group pitch. And I've had to modify that in terms of where I spend my time. I think of an agency as an operating system. So if an agency is the operating system, you're focused on product. Product are like the capabilities we have, the people, what we're doing in terms of pipeline. So that's pitches, like what clients we're bringing new things to or we're bringing new in as a way to really organize my time. So that's where I spend my time is like, what are the products we're putting out there? What is the agency focused on? What are we making? How are we selling those things to clients and as well as enriching our relationship with our clients? And then, of course, taking care of the people. So how are our talent doing? What are we hearing from them? What are the new things we need to be investing in them to make them faster, smarter, stronger, all of those things. So I think of the operating system of the agency and then spending my time in that way so that all parts of the agency are strong.
So I can't believe I'm going to ask you this question because I shouldn't have to and it shouldn't be the case. But, you know, you really have reached the top of this industry and there clearly are not enough women at the top. It seems that they get almost, you know, right below that highest rung, but it's still usually men, still usually white men. And why are we not making more progress, which almost sounds like a silly question at this point, but why don't you think we're making more progress? And what needs to be done?
You know, it is a question that many of my female community talk about on a regular basis. And I think we all wish we knew the exact answer. I think there's a couple of things. You know, I think a lot of women aren't supportive of other women. And that's a little bit of, you know, the gentlemen take care of each other and they rise together and protect each other. I think some women do that and some women don't. And I think we need more of that so that there's more of a protected, it's not competitive. We need to all be rising together. And I think that's really important to keep in mind because I think it's easy to feel, to your point, that there aren't a lot of women at the top. It's easy to feel like you're alone. Therefore, you may not want to stay in that role forever because you don't have your community around you that's supporting you in the workplace. So I think that's an interesting observation from my perspective. I also think when, you know, I look at even my daughter as a freshman in college, and I had the fun time of being at spring break with her and some of her friends. And I was even listening to them talking about marrying someone and they would have a lesser job than their partner, which I've never heard my son say ever, that are a little bit older. So I think that's an interesting dynamic that there's still this, you know, notion in culture around females not necessarily gunning for that top job, perhaps, that's also still pretty pervasive. Like my mom was a stay-at-home mom, but she would say to me, you know, there were not daycare options. It didn't exist, right? That is not the dynamic for my daughter. Yet, this is something that her friends were discussing. And I was sort of listening to this thinking like, wow, this is still a topic that is not necessarily the same that I hear some of the boys in my life talk about for themselves.
That's interesting. I do know a number of women that are the main breadwinner, but I don't, you know, sometimes I don't know if it's by choice. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. I hate to hear that almost, you know, that that's what some younger women are thinking. So I want to ask something that you mentioned, something that I have found really fascinating and upsetting, which is there are a number of women that I know, or that I know of, for those that I don't know, that really tout the women supporting women, you know, mantra, but you know it's not true. And what if you, I was going to say, why is that? But I think we can all figure out a lot of the reasons why. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, if you are a female leader in power and you do want to do stuff to actually support other women, what are some of the things you should be thinking about doing?
It is important to think about, one, bringing someone along with you to every conversation and finding your plus one that's going to rise with you, that you're showing the way forward with. I think that's important. I think the second thing that is important is you need to and model this. And if you're uncomfortable sort of fighting for the top for yourself, do it for all the other women, because there's not enough of us that are really pushing the envelope here. And I think women have a hard time not caretaking, right? So by default, you pushing yourself to be the number one is the opposite of caretaking. So it's a little bit of, I say to women I work with, it's like, reframe that to say, no, I'm taking care of you because I'm aggressively pursuing growth, salaries that are equal for all the important things for you, for the rising generations, because we need more and more of that. And that's a little bit of, you know, servant leadership, of like showing the way. And I think the last thing that I think I in particular know, a lot of women, once they have kids, they back away from the pressure of work. It's hard. It's really hard to be a working mom. And I think talking about that in the workplace is important. Saying, hey, I got to go. My son has a XYZ of a 10-year-old. My son has something at his school, but I'll be back on later, to say that I am making a choice. You all know I am doing this. It is important. I am breaking from this to do that. And I'm not going to not do my other job, the other 15 things I have to do. It's okay. It's okay to be a working parent. You're a better parent. Sorry, I think you're a better leader if you have kids in your life, because it teaches you all kinds of things that you then bring into the workplace. But I think women need to be okay with talking about that and how it's like more fluid in your life versus feeling like you have to choose one over the other.
I think that's an excellent point. I'm curious though, because it's much easier for a woman who's much higher up in her career to set these kind of boundaries than someone who's younger or someone who's sort of mid-level and doesn't want to disappoint anyone. Especially now that we're in this 24/7, you're never really off duty, which is a very unfortunate world. So do you have anything either you've put in place at your company, or the way that advice you could give to somebody who is a mother and wants to set boundaries, but is kind of afraid to do it?
Two things. One is when someone gave me this advice when I first had a baby, when I was 30, so young in my career, and gave me the advice of, it's okay for you to say I have to leave and you don't have to explain why. So I'm countering what I just said to you. And it's what it means is, don't make it that I have kids, you don't. So I get mm-hmm. to leave, you don't. Right. In that middle of your career, there is a, you're the person that stays late, you're the person that does this, right? You can't be the person that is using your children as like the better option if your coworker wants to go to yoga or whatever it is. So I think that's an interesting thing if you're in that, to say like, I have to go because I have to do something. And it's important that you also take turns with your coworkers on who's doing the late shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important, I used to work with someone, actually still work with her. And, you know, she was always like, I know you have to go for your kids. I was like, no, you're going, they're fine. You are going to yoga tonight. Like, that is really important to me, because you need to have your whole self at work. And so it's like, you need to work as a team at work. That way you can also take care of your family, or you're someone that doesn't have kids on your team can also take care of themselves, do whatever they want to do. All of us should have something to do, even in our 24/7, 365 work life that we have. We all need something else besides work.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. I have another question, since that was such good advice. I want to ask you something. We're entering conference season, or many big conferences are coming up, possible, CAN, which I know you were a juror at. And a lot of times, if people haven't been before to some of these conferences, or even if they have, unless you're really, you know, the upper person where everyone's vying for your attention, they can be very intimidating. And I'm just wondering, what is the best way, if it's your first time at a conference, to, or not even your first time, but you still deep down feel very overwhelmed, what's the best way to sort of handle those without feeling overwhelmed and be able to network?
Absolutely. I think going for your first time with the mindset of curiosity and to learn is the way to think about it. Go sit in the dark and watch all the speakers. You will take it all in, and go to make yourself go to one networking event per day. Right? If you think about it that way, don't put pressure on that you're not a juror or whatever it is. My favorite CAN was the first one I went to, and I sat in the Palais and listened to all the speakers and felt totally inspired. And then I went downstairs and looked at all the work by myself. And I think it's important that these events are really for you to learn about the industry and be inspired. And the networking component is important, but you developing yourself and drinking in what you're getting from all these different events like Possible, et cetera, is the most important part. And then, you know, I always say, like, do one thing, do one networking event, sit next to someone and introduce yourself, make one new friend, and then you'll get better at that. The more you walk into a room with people you don't know, the more likely it is you'll feel more comfortable the next time. But I wouldn't put too much pressure on yourself aside from enjoying the moment of being in an industry event and learning and hearing what the market is telling us.
I think that's great advice. Do you network still? Do you think it's important to network?
All the time. Networking is so important. Your network is your own network. So, you know, if you decide to change roles, you bring your own network with you. So to me, I think this is, you know, I commit to meeting two new people a week. Even if that means I meet them on LinkedIn and I respond to someone and I make a new relationship, I've just met you. But we should. And I think, again, a lot of female leaders are so focused on the work, they're not necessarily focused on their own enrichment. And so meeting someone that isn't in your industry that might be feeling the same things you're feeling as a leader is really helpful to you. And can also, you can take that and bring that back to your own org. But it's definitely important to network. Absolutely.
Yeah. I actually agree with you completely on everything you said. And I think people shouldn't put pressure on themselves at the same time to, like, inauthentically try to meet too many people anywhere, because it turns out that your best network, while always adding to it, like you say, I think are people that you've known forever and sort of grown up with them or met at important parts in your career. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. My strongest network have come, honestly, from being in an integrated agency team where a bunch of people that didn't work for the same agencies are thrown together on client X, and you just become best friends, right? Yeah. You're in it. It's a high pressure moment. We all need to work together. It doesn't matter what holdco you work for, what agency. And some of those businesses that I worked on quite a bit, these are my people that have moved on to client side or platforms or other agencies. And you see them and it's just like, oh my gosh, it's so fun. So I think that's really, it's doing the work. So within a holdco like Publicis Group, you know, often we're pitching things with our own teams, but sometimes we're thrown into big opportunities where you're working with someone you haven't met before, again, high pressure situation. And then you see them one day in Chicago or whatever, and you're like, how are you? So I think that it's really important through the work to use those moments to keep up with your broadened network, for sure.
I agree. And I think that counts so much more than someone that you've met at a cocktail party for 2 minutes.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although you never know. So do it
all. You never know. Right.
Okay, Amy, just if there's just to end, is there one piece of advice that has really helped you through your life and your career that you could please share with us?
Stay curious. I would say, you know, stay curious, be honest, and follow the data. Those are my three things. So stay curious. I mean, you know, I know people say being a lifelong learner, it's really important. You should be as curious about whatever that new thing is as anyone else in your, as your clients or as your coworkers. And you can teach yourself everything. So do it. And you can make yourself better versus feeling uncomfortable that you don't know something. Well, take the time to learn about the things that make you uncomfortable. Then you won't be uncomfortable. So that's one. That the second, and this is my father, you know, said this to us, all of us when we were little, which is like, no one can be mad at someone that is honest. If you make a mistake, admit it. You cannot be mad at someone that is humble. If you try to lie about it, that's where you get yourself into trouble. And I think being honest and transparent is really important because that's how you build trust. And it sounds very simple when I say that, but a lot of people have a hard time just honestly answering things. They're not lying, but just honestly admitting, I don't know this, or I'm not sure. Just be honest. And I think that is a really endearing characteristic that we all need to be comfortable with. And the last thing is the data. We live in a world where everyone is telling everyone something. I heard this, I did this, I saw this, right? And you can live in your own little digital bubble. But if you follow the data will tell you the answer. And that's a that's an unbiased answer. So I've always used data, especially in a world of ambiguity or where you have, you know, different points of view. The data will tend to put everyone together because you can't debate the numbers. That then also will also give you the guidance on decisions to make, et cetera. Those are my three things.
I love that. And I have to say, this is very exciting for me because for all the years I've been doing this, there are really about six things people say as advice in their own way. And I have never heard follow the data, and I love it.
Oh,
great. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you. And it seems very fitting considering the CEO of Digitas North America, follow the data and everything else, which you said. And thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Same. Thank you for having me.